The following podcast is intended for mature audiences and contains offensive material that is for entertainment purposes only. You have been warned. Show your support, go kill a small child.
Or a midget, do the same.
Yeah, midgets are fun-sized adults.
Exactly. Just hit really hard in the back of the neck. And they'll fucking most likely die.
Just fucking karate chop them in the back of the neck.
Like really hard, dude. Like, you ever notice they're bobbleheads? They have a weak neck. That's science right there, buddy. They're fucking bobbleheads, dude. Midgets. Walk around like that all the time. Did you hit them right in fucking back of the neck perfectly? Midgets. Dead. That's one less midget on the fucking planet.
Poor midgets. Poor midgets.
I learned that from CSI.
From who?
Maybe they wouldn't lie to me.
For who?
CSI. I watched an episode of CSI where a midget died like that. It was great.
Karate chopped at the back of the head?
No, like some guy hit him in the back of the head, back of the neck perfectly, and they were like, well, scientifically, they have weaker necks because of their head and their body, blah, 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 and their bone structure, blah, 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 blah. Sounded scientific to me. I was like, shit, okay, cool.
I wonder how many little people got super mad about it. They were like,
it was the late 90s. Nobody cared.
Motherfucker. Oh, no, I'm sure they care now. They're probably like, there's probably a hate group.
CSI, Dad from Fear.
Dad from Fear?
Yeah, remember the Fear movie with Reese Witherspoon and Mark Wahlberg?
Oh, God, who was in that? Hold on, I'm going to look it up.
Actually, he was also in the original Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, he was the guy that Edward Norton ended up replacing.
Who? Wasn't it Sam? Wasn't it Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh, wait, no. Oh, you mean Oh no, you mean Silence of the Lambs. I was thinking of Manhunter. Manhunter was the first of that series, and
it had the cop.
Yeah, and it, like that guy was the guy
yeah,
of the
Edward's character. Yeah.
Yeah. He played that
Dragon
guy.
One with Dragon Ball Z or whatever it was, or Red Dragon. That's it.
Red Dragon. Some Dragon Ball Z. Wait a minute. So who's the dad? Oh, so it's Law and Order William Peterson?
Yes.
Okay. Because you got to say it like that. It's got to be Law and Order. Doesn't matter.
I'm trying to remember the name. I couldn't remember. He's been in so many fucking movies.
Doesn't matter which movie it is, like, you know, it's Law and Order, Gary Sinise, Law and Order. Yeah, didn't Morgan Freeman do a Law and Order? Law and Order, Morgan Freeman.
After him. Remember, he left the show.
Law and Order.
Gary Sinise, Law and Order, Michael Caruso, or David Caruso.
David Caruso, yeah.
That one had the shades just mocking him. Every time he did the shades thing at the beginning of every episode, it was just hilarious.
Caruso, he was the one from...
NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
And the movie Jade.
All right, so I got to see Terrifier today, and I was going to tell you a bit about that.
What is... I need to watch both of those.
So, the first movie is actually All Hallows Eve. I don't know if you ever saw that, but there was... Art the Clown was actually in that as well. And but I don't think the movie... I don't know if the movie was centered around him or if that was supposed to be what the original movie was, the series was called, but... the movie, Terrifier 1 kind of... It starts off kind of like it's picking up from something, but it's not. But it kind of is. And the movie... has a lot of confusing moments in it, although I gotta say the death scenes are fucking great. They're really funny, really bloody. The guy, the Art the Clown killer, works in a lot of ways, but the ending to me was a little baffling. It didn't, it shouldn't have ended that way, but like I said, I never saw All Hallows Eve, so I don't really understand the character yet. But it does feel like an 80s B-rate movie. Like, it feels like, almost like, you know, when you watch, the first Psycho Cop, or the original My Bloody Valentine, or April Fool's Day, or any of, the low-budget 80s horrors that were actually okay slasher films.
Yeah.
That's what this movie feels like. It feels exactly like that. It's campy. It's got some pretty fun moments in it. Actually, one of the main characters that you get at the beginning of the movie, I actually saw her for the first time in Troma's Return to Nuke 'Em High. And that was Catherine Corcoran, I think that's her name. And then there's another girl named Jenna Cannell. She's actually, both of them are pretty good in it. But the thing that's confusing about the movie is that one of the characters gives you Final Girl vibes, right? And they don't sell it that way at all. Actually, the movie actually plays out more like you'd think a murder spree would actually play out. So it, the killer essentially just kills people. And then they did the one thing in a horror film that I fucking didn't expect at all. Because, you know, usually when you're watching a slasher movie, you think, okay, the character's got gimmicks, right? This character mostly goes after people with a sharp object of sorts. Either they have a scalpel or a knife or some kind of sharp instrument. One of the killer's weapons is this cat and nine tails made out of human hair, which is such a fun way to use that to make a weapon like that. And I really thought it was it was ingeniously done. The way they use, you know, the use of the weapons and the kind of the different things that the killer has at their disposal. It kind of feels like a party clown. A party clown shows up and he's got the big bag of tricks. That's exactly what this character does. He has his garbage bag full of weapons and different instruments of death and torture. And then... the thing I thought was the funniest about it was, out of nowhere, the fucking killer just pulls a gun out and just shoots his victims. And took me by surprise because I was expecting this movie to be more of a slasher. I didn't expect the killer to just pull out a gun. That didn't make like it almost didn't make sense. But at the same time, clowns do have like squirt guns or guns that go bang, right? So this clown has a gun that goes bang. They just should have paid it off that way. They should have pulled out a prop gun that shoots out the word bang first, and then pulls out a regular gun and shoots him bang, bang, bang. But they probably didn't want to copy like the Joker and the Batman movies, and they probably didn't want to make any like comparables like that.
Yeah,
because you couldn't really compare the killer in this movie to any other clown killing movie. Like, it definitely feels different. And I actually, in comparison to one of the other clown killer movies that you could point to from years past, it's better than 31. And 31 had a lot of killing in it, had a lot of characters in it, but I didn't think Rob Zombie's 31 was good. Like, it was really, I thought it was bad. The only thing good about it was Richard Brake.
Yeah.
He was the only good thing about the movie. His lines and delivery were fucking on point, but everything else about the movie was caca, you know, it was complete shit.
The last time Rob Zombie put something good out?
Devil's Rejects. Honestly.
Yep.
Like, really good? Yep. Memorably good? I mean, you could say his Halloween movies were good to a degree. Like, they're good. Like, the first Halloween was good.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't, like, a big favorite of everybody's, but I like Lords of Salem. But I also loved the fact that it was just uncomfortable and, like, really weird.
Couldn't sit through Lords of Salem.
Huh?
I couldn't get through Lords of Salem.
Yeah, a lot of people couldn't. Like, it's not a lot of people's favorite. And it's not one of my favorites. I like it. It's, if I compared it to Rob Zombie's other movies, I would put it towards the bottom of the list. I would put H2 and The Legend of El Super Beasto towards the bottom. That would be me. Where 31 is probably the bottom. I would make 31 my least favorite Rob Zombie movie.
What about Three from Hell?
For me, it's Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses, Halloween, Three from Hell. That'd be like the order I would follow those on. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. It was enjoyable. I actually thought it was Sherry Moon's best performance out of all three movies. It was definitely her best. But as far as like on the totem pole of his other movies, I would put it right below Halloween. But now for other clown movies though, it just, you know, like, as far as Terrifier goes, like, I would definitely keep it, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not one of the best movies. The first Terrifier was fun, you know. I gotta say, it's got one of the best dismemberment scenes I've ever seen in a horror movie. Ever.
Really?
It's gotta be one of my favorites. It's not my absolute favorite, but it's up there. Yeah, it's pretty high on my list now. Up until that point, I think one of my favorite dismemberment scenes in horror movie history was the fucking penis dismemberment scene in the third I Spit on Your Grave. The one where she's sucking the guy's dick and then she bites the head and then puts the knife straight through the top. And then splits the dick down the middle and bites the head off. And
yeah,
dude, that was so fucking brutal. That was definitely that's definitely my number one. Number two is the scene from the scene from Day of the Dead where the one sergeant gets his guts splayed out. by the zombies.
And the choke on it, Bart.
Yep. That was my number one until I saw I Spit on Your Grave 3, and I was like, holy shit. Another one that's up there for me is the split in half scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D. I thought that one was really good because they show most of it, you know, and it was just fucking brutal, like intensely brutal. Although I got to say that Texas 3D isn't one of my favorite Texas movies at all, but it's at least passable, minus the whole Welcome to Texas part, which is kind of fucking stupid. But I like the girl that said it. The chick from Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you didn't recognize her?
Oh, yeah, I remember you told me that. Yeah. She's hot.
Yeah, she got really hot when she got became an adult. I loved her in Malcolm in the Middle. I thought she was fucking hilarious. She's like obsessed with Malcolm, trying to like fucking being a psychopath and shit. But yeah, it's definitely up there as far as like body dismemberment and stuff like that. Because there's a lot of movies that show a lot of stuff. I mean, another one is the head rip and fucking Hatchet. That's another one.
Oh God, dude. I can watch that over and over and over. I still love that scene. That is still one of my top five.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was definitely up there. Especially the first time I saw it, I was like just visually impressed. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this is totally gross. But it's really good.
No, my favorite thing was all the blood splatter, meaning it's blood splatter against trees.
Oh, yeah, like when Robert Englund gets killed. You just see, like,
oh my God, that was just
bucket of blood washing the tree.
Oh, God.
It was so ridiculous, but it was awesome. It was like, you just loved Adam Green at that point. You're like, yes! Finally, somebody like us made a movie.
I know.
That's probably
got all the dream actors in the movie.
That's probably why the last Hatchet didn't, like the Victor Crowley movie didn't play well. I think he ran out of ideas because he kind of like, because if you look at all the kills from part 1, 2, and 3, he definitely outdid himself. Like he did a lot. And so I didn't really know where 4 was gonna go, and it really wasn't a good movie. You remember the first version we saw of it? We were like pissed because it was like PG.
Yeah,
it was like PG-13. They cut all the blood out, and it wasn't as gory. It was like watching a horror movie on TV. The only thing that was good about it was the part where they're on the airplane. This is your captain speaking.
I forgot about that part.
That was the best part. It was like, we're experiencing a little bit of turbulence as we go over this. You know, he's just kind of...
That's hilarious.
He just... Just the whole long pause, and like the one that was like super duper long, where he didn't say anything for like almost a minute. That fucking fried me. I couldn't believe how funny that was. That kind of prompted me to want to watch it for sure. And then I haven't seen too many other like newer horrors. Like I've been watching
Hellraiser. I really liked newer.
Yeah, that's right. I can't believe I forgot about that.
Yeah, I really liked that. I really liked the Cenobites. I really liked how well it was done. It was the best Hellraiser movie in years. I'm not saying it was the best Hellraiser movie, but it was better than we've got in fucking years. I'd say since.
Yeah, the five. Since 5, yeah, definitely since 5.
Because I remember not liking 4 so much, but the ones they released after, like 6, 7, and 8, yeah, made me like and appreciate 4 so much more.
And like, and even though, like, I know we actually gave the movie a good review, Hellraiser Judgment. Not to say that Hellraiser Judgment was bad.
Well, it was entertaining. It was different.
And
it was Hellraiser, but it wasn't Hellraiser, you know?
That's kind of the thing.
And it had to, like, Hellraiser was known for good lines. And they weren't written good in 6, 7, 8.
At least in
Judgment. And then they brought in that one actor, which was, I refused to watch that one. I knew it was going to be horrible. I wasn't even going to try to watch it. You watched it, told me what you thought, and I was like, yeah, I figured. And then they did Judgment.
Yeah, Judgment was actually okay, only because the delivery from the director who played the, I think he was the auditor or something like that.
Yep.
He had that
the
whole
accountant or some shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of had that like Max Headroom kind of vibe to him, and he was very entertaining. Like he delivered a lot of really good one-liners. He had a really good screen presence. He was more memorable than Pinhead was.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is that makes it probably the least, out of the good Hellraiser movies, that was the least good one.
Well, the thing is, I know people didn't like is like he went against hell in the end.
Yeah, yeah, and it kind of went too far against the grain. For a Hellraiser movie. But that was the thing about the new Hellraiser movie, is that this movie, it pays homage and it does something incredibly different that none of the Hellraiser movies ever did. It kind of rekindled the fire of, you know, what the purpose of the Cenobites is. What are they actually there for? And it kind of gives you a new perspective on what to expect in later movies.
It's somebody trying to find a loophole in the game.
Yep. It kind of reminds you of the first three. There's like pieces of the first three Hellraiser movies all in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like the one thing about the main villain in the movie is a lot like Dr. Chouinard, you know, except for he's like this rich occultist guy who discovers what the box and, you know, brings and what the hell.
And the boyfriend manipulating the girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of that's a very Hellraiser 3 kind of thing, you know, with,
I did love how the house,
J.P. Monroe, was,
like with the protection around it, the arm,
that house was badass. That house was really cool. The fact that it was like a big, it was a cage. It was like a huge trap for the Cenobites. And the one thing I'll say about this movie, okay, so even though she doesn't have the most memorable performance, right? Odessa Azian is definitely a good actress. She played her character well. Uh-huh. She's not Kirstie by any stretch of the imagination. She's not as good of a performer as Ashley Lawrence, but she played her part, and she was really good at what she was doing. I would like to see, you know, like if they make a new movie, they don't necessarily need to bring her back, but it wouldn't be bad. It would, like, I think if they brought her back, it would be different because she would have a purpose at this point, right?
Like, mm-hmm.
You know, she's more battle tested now, and maybe she's hunting the Cenobites. Maybe there's something different behind her character that they could do to make her more of that foil against the Cenobites. But I mean, she brought something different. It just wasn't as interesting or as compelling of a story as Kirstie Cotton's. But it was, you know, you did feel bad for her, you know, losing her brother.
Yeah, losing her brother, trying to find her brother, and never been able to, and couldn't get him back.
No.
It was pointless to get him back, and she figured that out on her own.
Yeah. You know, minus all the fucking...
It would never be him.
Minus all the drugs and alcohol that it was, like, completely wasting her brain. You know, she was able to get past that, you know. She was focused, you know. And the other one, too, that really got me about this movie is I love the kills. Like, a lot of the kills were really ingenious. The way they introduced...
The girl in the van.
Oh, my God. The van was the best one. That was the best scene.
Yeah, that was so fucking amazing.
Just watching the way the rooms would become the kill rooms for the Cenobites. Just out of thin air. Like, in the back of the van. Oh, now we're in the room. You know, the fact that when they're driving past that one landscape and you see the ground open up, right? And you're like, oh my God, that is so wicked. And then the other thing I really love is the way the Cenobites look. And to some degree, they probably could have done a little bit better job with this. They could have maybe doctored up the exposed skin with more glistening kind of oils, or maybe added more of the blood gel to it to kind of make it shinier, maybe add some glitter in there to kind of make it glisten, because the way it looked in certain lighting and on certain TVs, especially if you're using like a 4K TV, you're able to see how that it's a very unkempt, like special effects prosthetic. But on a practical TV, on a regular television, it looks fucking gnarly. Like, it looked really cool. And I just love the fact that the Cenobites look like they're wearing their own skin as clothes, which is such a unique take on the
leather. I like seeing that guy after the credits get cinematized. I did like that.
Oh, yeah. His was really good.
Oh, I hadn't seen somebody get cinematized in a long time.
Fuck no. And just the way they did that too, because he's like, they're like shredding his skin up. They pull off his genitals and shit.
They did some fucked up shit.
They got brutal. Actually, the one thing that if you ever notice, if you're watching the movie, right, and you see Chatterer for the first time, you'll notice that his dick is completely stretched out in front of him. Like, it's like, It's almost like he's got like a steel rod in there and it's like stretched. It looks really fucking cool. But it's like hard to notice because you don't see full body shots of him all the time. Same thing with like Jamie Clayton's version of the Hell Priest. You know, like her outfit was very, very much like Pinhead's was. He has, you know, she had the kind of skirting and the way her outfit was supposed to kind of resemble the priest outfit, but it was done in such a different way, you know, that metal or that like a gold piece that she has on her neck, and how they kind of represent all the like the weird mechanical torture devices as gold. I thought that was kind of a cool touch. You know who I was actually really surprised that I actually really liked that movie?
Huh.
Two friends of the show actually got a chance to see it. Kevin saw it first, and he said, and then after that, you know, knowing that I'm, you know, on a trans journey, basically said, now it's my turn to be Pinhead. I'm nowhere near as slim looking as Jamie Clayton, so I don't think I can actually.
No, neither of them are.
No, she, like, if you ever see her Instagram, she's kind of sexy looking, so. So he saw it, he really liked it, and then he made Phil watch it, because Phil, like, I told Phil about it, and Phil didn't really want to see it, because it was on Hulu. He's like, well, if it's on Hulu, I'm probably never going to see it, you know, like, he's never going to subscribe to Hulu or something.
Oh, we don't have this there internet in this here part.
Oh, he does. They just spend way too much money on cable. So I told him he can get Hulu really cheap. Dude, I pay $2 a month for Hulu. Like, I found it on the Black Friday sale, and And every so often, when I have Hulu, I'll cancel it, sign up with a different email account to get a different promo. And I've never paid full price for it in the past like 6 years. So that's why I'm like surprised. Oh, nobody wants Hulu. It's like $8 a month or $10 a month if you don't want commercials. I was like, there's ways around that, you know, just like all the streaming apps have that loophole. You know? Like I remember you remember when I had WWE Network and I didn't pay for it for like 4 years?
Yeah, no shit.
Before they switched over to Peacock. Dude, I did not pay for that. I never paid for it. I would just cancel it after the pay-per-views were over, and then they give me another.
Start making me pay for the premium.
And then they give me like a 2 month free trial after you cancel it, and then you go back and you watch the 2 months, and then you cancel it again. And then they gave you more free trials. It was like a never-ending nightmare of fucking bullshit. I was like, is WWE ever going to take my money? What is up with this? I think the only money I've given them is to go see Raw live and fucking get a Miz shirt, and that was pretty much it. We haven't paid for an actual pay-per-view since the fucking late or the 90s and early 2000s.